before you, is it on yet?
It is. It's okay. Fine. Go ahead.
All right.
And what were you going to say?
I was just going to reaffirm what your name is.
Anna.
Anna.
That's important.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for coming and sharing. Could you please tell me your name?
My name is Peggy Spangler. I am a pastor of a congregation, United Methodist Congregation in Newburgh, Pennsylvania. And with me today is Becky Wadle, who is a member of that congregation and very active member. And so I wanted her to come and share her perspective, too, on what it's like to have a pastor who's in a cancer treatment program. Mm.
Thank you. Thank you both so much for coming. So can you tell me your age? Can you tell me your diagnosis? And how long you've been treated here?
Well, I was diagnosed last December. I had a lump on my left leg that I wanted to have off before my insurance rate changed, and was just blown away, as was the doctor, when it came back that it was melanoma. So I began the journey. That was the 27th of December of 2011. And the first oncologist I met with said that this was going to be a lifelong thing and I would die of this. And I said, I beg your pardon, but I'm not accepting that diagnosis. And so from there, I spent the next 3 months researching, checking out different facilities, and found my way to, through that, actually that doctor referred me to Johns Hopkins then. And but through the PET scans and so forth, they said I had stage four. So from me going to saying, cut that out again, they said surgery wasn't the route that I needed to take. And so then I was really concerned because being a pastor, I've worked with a lot of parishioners who have had cancer, and I didn't like the word chemo. Mm-hmm. As too painful, I've seen what it's done to people. And so I didn't know what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so then when immune therapy was introduced to me, I was sold on it. This is the way I was going. It was working with my system, and the IL-2 that I started with actually had a very small percentage of cure rate, and I don't know whether they use cure rate, but I used cure rate. So it was at that point where, with all the symptoms you were going to have, and I was admitted to hospital for a week, that I knew I couldn't continue working as a pastor to do what I was doing. So I went to the Lord, and I said, okay, you know, if I'm not going to be here, who will? And he gave me a name of a colleague I didn't know very well, and I called her. And then I called my boss, which is a district superintendent, and said, I want this person here. And that's not the usual way we do it in the United Methodist Service. In fact, he said to me, you're trying to do my job. But anyway, she came. Mm-hmm. And so she was with the congregation for the 4 months. It was supposed to be three. And I was supposed to be through four cycles of IL-2. Well, after the second one, the PET scan came back that some had grown, some had shrunk, and Dr. Sharpen said that IL-2 was not the way to go, that I needed to change. So then I was back to, where do I go from here? Mm-hmm. And he offered me one drug that had just come on, was approved by the FDA. Mm-hmm. And this clinical study that I can't even remember the number, 15-something. And I looked at all the symptoms, and I didn't like any of them. I was angry. I have a completely healthy body that is now invaded by melanoma in my leg and in my lung. And I didn't like all these symptoms that were going to give me less health than I had now. But I called the research doctor that was on, and I got referred to Alice Pons, and Alice called me, and she said, that doesn't mean that you're going to have all those symptoms. Mm-hmm. And she said, what you've been through with the IL-2 and the symptoms from that, this is going to be like nothing compared to it. And so she went through each one of the symptoms and said, well, if you already had some of these symptoms when you were coming in, it would aggravate them, but you don't. So that sounded good. And then I checked out with some other doctors, Milton Hershey. I gave them the protocol, and I said, what do you think? And they said, go for it. And that I was an excellent candidate. So I came in, and Dr. Sharpman always laughed because he always had to have four or five seats because all my children came, and they had questions. And when we went down to sign up for the program, they all were there, and Alice took each one of the symptoms and told us, well, this is not likely. This would only happen if, and so we got down to. Let's see. So we began the treatment program.
And when was that you began this treatment?
We began because the first cycle, which is a cycle, is 6 weeks, and I had to come every week because the opposite weeks, the infusions, and I use the word infusions because I don't know what else to call it, but the drug that we're using is every other week, but I would come for blood work and to see Dr. Sharp in the opposite weeks, and then the testing again every 6 weeks, more CAT scans and so forth. So after that, it's been every other week, and which isn't too far. I'm about an hour and a half away. I bought a retirement home because and I don't know whether I told you my age, but I'm 70, so I'm on the verge of retiring, just from pastoral ministry, because we never retire. We always are serving in some way. Mm-hmm.
And so when did you start this therapy? When was the first week that you became part of the trial?
The part of the trial, I think, was the beginning of March, like March 5th, because the church gave me another month off since it was every week and we didn't know what was going to happen. So I had that first cycle and terrible itching, which I had itching with the IL-2. Mm-hmm. But then Dr. Sharfman got me on an allergy pill that I take once a day, and no more itching.
Great.
I'm tired, but tired for me is different than tired for most people because I'm a type A high energy person. And so now I've learned when I have to go and lay down. I guess one of the benefits, I always was sort of a health nut, but I was sloppy with it. And when I found out that sugar feeds cancer, I announced to the congregation, no more sugar. But what was amazing about the whole thing was we had had a spiritual retreat, and the gentleman that came had talked about fasting. And this was October a year ago. And so I fasted for the month of November to be in the presence of the Lord and to know where he was calling me, what he wanted me to do. And then in January, well, in December, I announced to the congregation that we were going to fast for who their next pastor would be in January. So the whole congregation fasted from January 2 to January 22. And so by the time they were finished fasting, and in the midst of that fasting, I was announcing that I had cancer and that I was going to be taking a medical leave, but the higher-ups had already decided to leave me there for another year. So I said, I won't be here for 3 months, but I'm coming back after this, and I'll be your pastor for another year. And that was like the answer to the fasting. In fact, the chair of my council said, well, that's what the Lord has been saying to us and what we need to go with. So while I was off, they decided they wanted a list of everything I did and who was going to do it while I was away. So between the new pastor that I invited in and the congregation, they just worked and worked and worked to keep things afloat. And we're saying, you know, well, we just want her to come back doing half of what she did before. So it was an opening, I guess, for the congregation as to what all a pastor does.
Yeah, an education.
Yeah. And so now we have a daycare there, too, and our daycare director is off having a baby. And so I'm not only doing all the pastoring, but I am the interim daycare director. And I can testify that daycare directors is a full-time job.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yes.
I believe that.
So I'm ready for I think today is my last day of cycle three, the last infusion for cycle three, and I go into four.
Wow. So yeah, three quarters of a year almost you've been dealing with all of this. And so in what other ways would you say your congregation has been affected, having a pastor with cancer, been affected by your journey?
I think they've become more aware of the healing scriptures. In fact, Becky just handed me a calendar yesterday. She says, we have to take this along now. It has healing scriptures for every day of the month. And so they had a healing scripture in the bulletin every week the whole time I was gone. And I talk about healing. I talk about to them about the fact that God already healed us 2,000 years ago. And so we need to claim what he has done. And what was so amazing to me that my first treatment over here back in March, I'm sitting there, I haven't had the infusion yet, and this gentleman comes up to me. He takes lunch orders, and he cleans up the I think his name's Ronald. And he looked at me, and he pointed his finger at me. He says, you know you're already healed. And I says, yes, sir, I know that. He says, Christ did it 2,000 years ago. And, of course, I'd been preaching that to my congregation, and here he was preaching it to me. And so I was excited about that. The John Hopkins would allow the word of the Lord to be proclaimed by a worker or by parishioners. And people are hungry. They want to know about my prayer shawl and where can they get a prayer shawl.
People, you mean patients?
Patients, yes, and their families.
And so this is something you wear when you're receiving treatment?
Right. I put my prayer shawl around my shoulders, and I have a cross that I put in my hand, and I have my iPhone with healing scriptures. So I'm listening to healing scriptures the whole time I'm receiving an infusion. And I did that the whole time I was in the hospital, every treatment. And I'd have healing songs playing. The nurses would hear it and come in. And say, oh, I remember when you were here before, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
There's reasons why God has me down here. If it's nothing more than to encourage another patient. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But I think I'm starting a prayer shawl ministry. I'm going to bring them down. And I have people starting to make them. Because even men need a prayer shawl. My son-in-law had colon cancer, and when his church, which was my home church, sent me the shawl he brought in, he says, that's nicer than the one I got. Mine was just a little square. So men want a full shawl that they can be enveloped in and know that the presence of God is available through prayer to bring them healing and wholeness and peace. So anyway, when and we're just going to see who God lifts up to receive prayer shawls.
Oh, I love that idea.
So
that's wonderful. So you, so it's how you're describing both your congregation being lifted up. You're describing yourself being lifted up. It seems like there's physical healing on your part.
There's no more cancer in my lungs. They're clear. Dr. Lipson showed me the scans.
Wow.
And so we're celebrating that. And it's out of my ankle. It's just in my knee and my groin at this point. And it's softening up. So so we'll see. The clinical study is a 5-year study that you can be in if you need 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I'm going to need 5 years, but we'll see what the Lord has to say and what He wants. And but what I found was a little bit of truth from what that first doctor said, that it's a lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have a different perspective on life. Not that I think it's going to be any shorter, because I told Dr. Sharpman I'm living to be 93. And my daughter said, well, why that, mother? And I says, well, that's how old our father was. And when he died, and Dr. Sharpman says, I'll have to get another oncologist because he won't be around that long. So, and of course, he laughed.
Yeah,
so.
So how has it changed your perspective on life then, if not?
Well, it's broadened my horizon. I'm more bold now about sharing what Christ can do in our lives than I was before. I think before I felt like I'd watch people who were ill that weren't getting well, or that died, and so, you know, you're hesitant about sharing,
yes,
like Ronald did, about what God really can do. And and even the whole faith perspective, people say, well, I have faith, why haven't I been healed, or why wasn't so-and-so? But Jesus says, you only need faith, the amount that I give you, amount as small as a mustard seed, and you can move your mountain. And your mountain is cancer, whatever kind it is. And I have a dear friend who's a 12-year survivor, and she lived on the mustard seed. In fact, everybody in Harrisburg Hospital knew her as the mustard seed lady, because she claimed it. She told them, I'm healed, and she was. So I become more bold along with her in claiming that.
Do you think members of your congregation have become more bold in the same way? Do you think they're sharing with people they wouldn't have otherwise, sharing their faith?
Well, I don't know. I think so. I hope so. They're a strong faith-based community. They're farmers.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to walk by faith,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, their whole livelihood is based on faith. And they're gracious and giving people, not just their time, but the finances and support of the church and missions. I think that they are excited. They usually feel like I'm always pushing them to the next level, but they're always kind of, yeah, where are we going next, you know? I'm going to miss them when I retire.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I know God has something else. He gave me, I thought I was buying a retirement home, and I said I bought a convalescent home. But I see it as a retreat center.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it because of the flower gardens in the backyard, and it's just beautiful, beautiful. They're my prayer gardens, and I have a fish pond. And And when I came home from the first IL-2 in March, it was those 2 weeks that we had, summer in March,
mm-hmm, yes,
and it was in full bloom. And it was like I was just in you know, the song, In the Garden, He walks with me and He talks with me and He tells me I am His own. And you just feel His presence, and the whole serene area.
That's wonderful.
So,
do you have any members of your congregation that also have cancer that you've connected with in any different way now that or since you were diagnosed?
We don't have any in the congregation themselves, but
Cynthia,
yes. Thank you for reminding me of Cynthia. Cynthia actually came alongside me because she had had cancer. She has leukemia. And so she, and that was her second bout with cancer. She had breast cancer before then. But she kind of walked me through those beginning questioning, where do you go from here? And, oh, yes, I've seen that doctor. And
she stepped forward to offer you.
Yes, yes. So she was more ministering to me than I was to her. Mm-hmm. But that's my congregation. Mm-hmm. We have a prayer group that prays every Thursday night, and there's a whole list of people in the community that have cancer or other things that are prayed for. They're listed every week in the bulletin. So they're... I don't like to put too much attention on me, per se, within the congregation. Oh, I'm doing this, I'm fighting this. I want their attention to be on the Lord and what the Lord is doing, not me.
Mm-hmm. I understand. So what do you imagine the congregation will take forward, that the new, even when you leave the congregation, how do you feel it's changed the group in how they think or how they function or what they believe?
Well, they love to worship, and their worship has really become spirit-filled. We're not a real large congregation. In fact, we went through a split where part of the congregation wanted to remain with a smaller building that we had, a smaller sanctuary. So they're taking care of the historical area of the church, and we became a smaller congregation and built a new sanctuary. And so their heart is to reach out to the community and offer Jesus Christ. So they're constantly seeking how they can be hospitable in this community, and what they can do, and how they can serve the Lord. And they're willing to seek and struggle through that. So where they'll be when I'm gone, I don't know, but I'm excited for them, mm-hmm. because they are ready to move forward. And I've been praying for 3 years for the next pastor that it will come in and come alongside them and move them out further into the community.
And may I ask you, what was it like to deliver that news to your congregation? Did you do it in the form of a sermon? Was it a more casual gathering? Do you remember what that felt like?
Well, we have, in our prayer time, because of our size, we're not a formal, here's the list, but people actually share. So I come down into the midst of the congregation, and first of all, I ask for celebrations and what's God done in your life this week, and then prayer concerns. And so I hear all theirs. And of course, some of them already knew. So someone was saying, well, Pastor Peggy, what about you? And so, mm-hmm. okay. So I saved that to last and just shared what was happening. And then I go up to the altar, and we have a prayer bench, and I kneel and pray on behalf of the, I don't know whether in behalf, because I think they're all praying with me. Mm-hmm. And we're all bringing our hearts to the Lord. So, but within the context of prayer. Mm-hmm. And I think I even told him back then that the Lord was healing me.
Did you feel like they're, and I don't know if you can generalize for the whole congregation, but that generally their response was one of fear for you or for the congregation, or did you feel like their initial response was one of immediate faith in your healing, or did you feel how did did you feel they responded to your to that initial piece of news?
I felt loved and cared for. And the cards, some of my parishioners faithfully sent me a card every week. Multiple, and not just from my congregation, but from congregations all around, people in the whole Central Pennsylvania Conference, at least the southern half, were all praying. The churches were lifting me up, and but my parishioners, and they'd bring food over when I was home, and my brother came down from Boston to take care of me. And he lost his wife to cancer. It'll be 2 years in December. So he came to take care of his older sister. And he would drive me to church. So even though I wasn't preaching, I would go and I'd be with them. And usually not. If I came out of the hospital on Friday, that week I was too sick to. But the following Sunday, I would be there. And then I'd go back in the hospital again. And it would start all over again. But I, and they were always so glad to see me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure. Sure. Would you mind if I asked you a question? I'm going to introduce yourself once more.
Okay. I'm Becky Wadle, and I'm Pastor Peggy's friend and one of her parishioners.
And so, do you remember hearing that news for the first time that your pastor had cancer?
Yeah, I believe she had told me before she announced it to the whole congregation. And I was fearful at first because when you hear cancer, you get fearful. But we prayed all the time for her. I have three friends with cancer, three close friends with cancer, and they're the first ones I pray for in the morning. So we believed she would be healed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What can you say about the journey of the congregation from that moment until now? How do you think things have changed or people have changed?
Well, I think not having her with us, now we really liked the pastor that came for 4 months. Her name was Pastor Peggy also. Oh. But but I think we did pitch in a lot because the other Pastor Peggy wasn't there through the week. And so I think we did learn to help support the church in other way, in more ways than what we had been before. And then when our Pastor Peggy came back, we decided, you know, anything we could do, change meetings, anything we could do to help support her, we would do. I do think we pray more than we had.
Do you think you pray for different things, or pray differently, or just more often?
I don't know about different things. I've also been doing some reading, and a lot of my prayers now are thankful prayers instead of asking for things, but thanking for what I have. So, appreciating what I have. So that's me personally. I don't know about everybody else.
Mm-hmm. So what are you thinking? Are there other aspects of your journey this last 9 months?
I think that it has brought my family closer together.
Tell me about that.
My kids were cooperating more. The thought as Becky said, cancer is fearful, so they were fearful at first. And now I think we're back to normal. they don't think their mother's dying, which is a good, is good, because they have their lives to live too, and in some ways it was an awful burden on them. But besides my immediate family, I'm one of five, and we've been together several times, all five of us, and that was good to be together with your brothers and sisters, because sometimes after your parents are gone and you're the oldest generation, that doesn't happen. So I value the time spent with them and the connection with them that has been enriching. And my friends, you never know where your friends are until something like this. And I am blessed with lots and lots of dear friends. And I think when I started the treatment, I said to Dr. Sharfman and Alice, because, you know, when you look at a five-year program, I says, well, I guess by the end of this, we'll be best friends. I do. I value both of them and Robert Gray, who I call my own phlebotomist.
We should all have such a wonderful own.
Yes. So, just like this interview, I said check it out with Alice, because she rearranges my whole schedule. If Alice doesn't say it goes, I can't do it.
Even personally, I run everything by Alice. Do you think of any ways you might be different? You mentioned your family. You might be different as a sister now, or different as a mother now.
I hope I'm a better listener. I hope I can love more. And we have a grandma's code at the church and with my friends that are grandparents, that zip your mouth. They're raising their kids. We raised ours. So that's always been in place, but I think that my desire is in a quiet, serene way to be wisdom for my grandchildren. That's my heart's desire, that I might be able to instill in them whatever it is they need, because I have a listening ear and I can reflect what they're feeling. That's And for anybody else that God puts in my path, that I can be that for. Mm-hmm. But
what do you think you could provide to them now by way of wisdom that maybe you couldn't have prior to all this?
Well, just being there for them at this point. I mean, they're 12 through 16, so they're not the little ones that I used to be able to cuddle. So it's a new way of relating to them. And it always has to be on their timetable. So you just have to wait. As you wait on the Lord, you have to wait on your grandkids. So I don't know how that'll look.
If someone... someone hears your story on the website, and people will. Do you feel like you've said what you want to say and told the impact as you see it on your life and your congregation?
I think so. I'd say cancer is indeed a journey, but it is a journey full of unexpected, unanticipated joys as well as sorrows. And I think it's whether you want to see your cup as half full or half empty. And I always like a half full to overflowing. And the Spirit of God will give you that. If you take Him along on the journey, it'll be a blessing to you and to everyone you touch.
Thank you so much.